glad to have the young folks back. I know you're all rested, ready to get up early in the morning. We miss you. We're glad that you're back safely. We prayed for you while you were gone, that you'd have a good weekend, so we hope you did. I want to share a lesson with you tonight that I've entitled Growing Old Gracefully. And I feel kind of like N.B. Hardiman, who, when he was asked to speak on a similar topic, said, I'm too young to speak as one should on this subject. And he was in his late 80s at that time. By the way, we have some examples of folks who have grown old gracefully. Brother John Cheatham just had a birthday, 89. And I would say he has grown old gracefully, wouldn't you? Most young people don't think about growing old, which is pretty understandable, because they've not yet experienced the reality of growing old in the sense of anything being lost or the declining of physical strength or mental capabilities. For them, getting older has always meant getting better as they were gaining strength and physical maturity and reaching toward a peak of their own personal maturity. And so growing old means something different to them. I have to say, and my wife will agree with this, that I've always kind of liked the idea of being old. She's told me lots of times that I'm an old man, and she reminds me of my pickup truck with the camper on it, and she's told me repeatedly, why don't you take that camper off of that truck? It makes you look like an old man. And I said, well, I am an old man. And that camper just fits me just fine. How many of you, since we're talking about being old, how many of you remember the real McCoys? Yeah. And the star of it, Grandpa McCoy, I remember as a young boy watching that and listening to him as he got out of his chair and hearing him grunt when he got out of his chair, and then watching when he walked. You remember his walk? He would walk and he would hump his shoulders every time he took a step. And I never did know what that was about. And I have to say that I still don't understand what it does, but it helps. I used to laugh at Janice's dad because I thought everything he did exemplified an old man. And I can remember when we would be staying with them, going into the bathroom in their home, and I can distinctly remember his shaving can that he had. And most of the time, it was rusted around the bottom. And it was rusted, and I used to laugh. I thought that was the funniest thing I ever saw. I'd tell Janice when we left, it's rusted because he uses so little of it, he won't use any of it hardly. And he just used just a little bit, and it lasts about 3 years, you know, when he does it. Well, the other day, I looked at my shaving cream can, and guess what? It had some rust around the bottom. I used to give him Christmas gifts. He was an outdoorsman. And I used to give him Christmas gifts that I always wanted, things like a new tackle box or a new pair of hunting pants. And I can remember that he almost never used them. And I would think, well, I guess I got him something that he didn't want. But I came to realize later that he was really, really proud of those things that I got him. It's just that the one that he had wasn't worn out yet. And so he would put it up. And most of those things were still in the top of the closet whenever he died, because the old ones hadn't worn out. And I've learned some things about myself also that are pretty similar to that, because I truly do like old stuff better than I do new stuff. And my girls all laugh at me because the shoes, the dress shoes that I wear, I like leather sole shoes, and they wear out, you know, within 2 or 3 years. And so I had a pair not very long ago that I had taken back to the shoe repair shop for about the fifth sole. And the guy told me, he said, "Mr. Stegall," he said, "you really do take good care of your shoes, but I think this is the last sole we're going to be able to put on these shoes." And we were out eating lunch with a couple today that have been visiting. And I had taken my coat off and left it in the car. And if you'll notice, my shirt is monogrammed. And he commented about the monogram on my shirt. And I thought a minute, and I said, "You know what? This was monogrammed back when it was cool to have monogram. Sometime in between the mid and the late 80s. And that's the truth. And this shirt is still a perfectly good shirt, and I still like it. And it doesn't matter that it's about 25 years old. It's still a good shirt. And I find my wife trying to throw some of my stuff away sometimes, and I have to rescue it from the garbage can. That's the truth. I like growing old. I just didn't know that it was going to hurt. There are some other signs that I have of growing old, but I don't want to talk about them. It's an interesting progression that is involved in growing old. And you better be careful what you laugh at, because it'll probably happen to you if you live very long. Everyone in my family is thrilled that our two youngest daughters are having babies. But some of that excitement, at least on the part of some of us, has a slight amount of ulterior motives. There is some rumor, which I will neither confirm nor deny, that they may have said more than one time, "My kids will never do that." And so they have a couple of older sisters who have this funny little smile on their face these days. And they're watching to see. Growing old, it's a blessing, it's a privilege. And it's a beautiful thing if you do it right. Growing old gracefully doesn't happen by accident. In fact, no good thing happens in this world by accident anymore, since sin has entered. And there are some principles that I want to talk about in just a few moments that will help you to not become cynical or bitter or hostile or angry. I use this with some apologies to the ladies, okay? But back years ago, when one of my daughters, I won't tell which daughter it was, got married, then her husband and I went to visit an older couple, and we talked for a long time. And when we left in silence, and we drove down the road a little ways, and he said to me, "Mr. Stegall, I have a question for you." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "Why is it that when men get older, they get quiet? And when women get older, they get mean?" Well, we had to have a discussion about that. And I told him if he had good sense, he never would say that. So I just told you what I... That just tells you something about me, doesn't it? It is possible to grow old gracefully. Someone has said, most men spend the first half of their lives making the second half miserable. And probably that's a significant overstatement, but it is true that how you spend the first part of your life determines how you're going to spend the last part of your life and what kind of person you will become. I'm a different person now than I was when I was 21 years old. I'm a lot different person now. And I hope that most of those differences, I hope that all of those differences are good. I'm sure that they're probably not all good. But there are advantages to growing older. And one of them, from a practical standpoint, is you don't have to prove anything anymore. You don't have to brag about what you can do because it's either there or it's not there. You know, that's just the facts of it. And you don't have to jump in and prove something to someone. And that's pretty neat. That's really neat. I don't know, speaking from a lady's standpoint, but that's a really neat thing from a guy's standpoint, because we live a good portion of the early part of our lives feeling like we have to prove something to everybody, prove that we can do this and we can do this and we can do this. And it's really neat to get to a point where you're not motivated by that. You're not trying. You don't have to impress. You don't have to impress other people. We have some biblical examples of people who grew old gracefully, Moses and Joshua and Peter. And you know, as I study different Bible characters, I hear other preachers talk about, you know, that they feel like that they're like Paul. Well, I don't feel like I'm like Paul. There was part of me that wishes that I was more like Paul. But I honestly do feel like I'm more like Peter than I am Paul. Because Peter, I guess you will say, he chose to work from the inside and Paul chose to go to the peripheral edge out here. He wanted to go where no man had gone before. And Peter worked within the church, within the Jewish community and the original church. And there are some things about Peter that I really do admire. There are things about Paul that I admire. But one of the things that struck me some time ago that I really admire about Peter is the way that he aged. He became an elder, for one thing, and that speaks volumes for the way that he lived his life and how he ordered his family. And he remained diligent as death approached. In 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 13, he says, I know that I will soon put aside this earthly tent. But he said, I have a job to do between now and then. He said, the Lord's made it plain to me that I'm not going to be here much longer. But he said, but I want to make sure that you remember the things that I have taught you after I'm gone. And so that became his mantra. That became what he wanted to accomplish with his life from that point that he wrote that till whenever the Lord chose for him to come home. And then in that same epistle in 2 Peter, he's going to make a statement about something that Paul reported in Galatians chapter 2. You remember Paul wrote about how he had rebuked Peter publicly before them all. And to be real honest with you, there's a part of that that sounds kind of arrogant to me. That it seems to me that if he had something to say to Peter, that he could have taken Peter aside and talked to him privately about it, but he didn't choose to do that. And by the way, I'm not saying what he did was wrong. I think what he did was right, because Peter had stood as an example of hypocrisy at that point in his life, and he not only wanted to straighten Peter out, but he wanted to make sure that the other folks didn't join in with that hypocrisy that Peter was involved in. Whenever he was with the Gentiles, he acted like a Gentile. And then when his Jewish brethren came from Jerusalem, then all of a sudden he pulled away from the Gentiles and he wouldn't eat with them and he wouldn't associate with them. And so Paul rebuked him severely and publicly. And not only that, then he wrote about it. And we can still read about it. And so in a sense, he humiliated him forevermore. And then when Peter will write about Paul in 2 Peter chapter 3, very near the end of the last thing that he will ever write that we have preserved for us, he commended him about his teaching as he called him our dear brother, Paul. And I think of how, to me at least, if somebody had called me out publicly and rebuked me publicly before them all, I think it might take me a while to get over that. Even if they were right, a part of me would say, you know what? You could have come to me privately and we could have talked about that and given me a chance to repent and apologize for it. But you called me out publicly. But yet Peter, it seems to me, grew old extremely gracefully. It's also, we all also know persons ourselves that have grown old and are very graceful in that age. And I've been blessed to know a number of such people in my life, and I'm sure that you have also. Victor Hugo wrote, "When grace is joined with wrinkles, it is adorable. There is an unspeakable dawn in a happy old age." And I think he's exactly right. By the way, Victor Hugo is the one who wrote the book that now the new popular movie's out, Les Miserables. How many of you have seen that movie? You know, I can't put myself in a position to recommend a movie. So, for the record, I'm not recommending that movie. But I did go see it. And it's really interesting because I think this is written in the 1860, thereabouts, somewhere along in there. It's really a story about law and grace. And it's really, really an interesting storyline through that. If you want to read the book, it's about 1,500 pages, but the movie doesn't last that long. You know, you might see the short part of it. But again, I can't recommend it. There's some things in it that I can't approve of or recommend it. But how can we live in such a way that we can grow old gracefully? Well, there are some principles that I'd like to share with you, and they're not new. They're old. But just to put them in this context, sometimes you can put a truth that you know in a context, and it becomes even more meaningful. The first principle I'd like to bring out is whatever a man sows, that's what he's going to reap. I remember having a discussion with an older man when I was younger that I had a lot of respect for, and I always liked to be around him because I liked his homespun philosophy, his wisdom that came from him, and I learned lots and lots of things from him. And I was talking about how that when we get older, we mellow out. And I was talking about some particular person. He's an elder in the church, and we were talking about some situation. I said, you know, when we get older, we mellow out. And he said, no, we don't. We don't mellow out when we get older. We intensify. I said, what do you mean? He said, if you are a good, kind, loving person when you are young, you will be a really good, kind, loving person when you're old. If you are an angry, hostile, mean person when you're young, you will be really angry and hostile and mean when you get old. And I've thought about that a lot. And I'm sure that's not an absolute truth because the Lord makes it possible for us to change. But aside from the Lord or something intervening in our life to change us, that's exactly right. And we see people that are very kind and graceful and loving as older people. And it's very likely that they began that back a long time before they got old. And we see some people that are really angry and hostile and mean and spiteful in their old age. And it's very likely that they were that way. They may have just gotten to a point where they got tired of covering it up and just didn't care whether somebody saw it or not. What a man sows, he will reap. That's stated more fully in Galatians 6, 7, and 8. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit shall from the Spirit reap eternal life. And that's just a true principle in life, isn't it? And we know all the illustrations about if you want corn in your field, then you plant kernels of corn. And if you expect to get corn, because you're going to reap what you sow. If you take good care of your body, then you're much more likely to enjoy better health throughout your life. If you ignore healthful habits early in your life, then your body's going to suffer for it. And I wish somebody had impressed me with that a little bit more when I was younger, because that's very true in our lives. This is especially even more so in the spiritual realm. Job's friend said, "Even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same." And so it is. Much of the bitterness and discontent and anger that characterizes some when they're older is a result of sowing to the flesh. And they're now reaping the corruption of the flesh. It's ironic, I think, that most young people don't realize that the popular lifestyle of the world of doing your own thing and sowing your wild oats is the very thing that produces the difficulty, the pathetic emotional and physical condition found in some older people, because they felt that same way. He that would pass the latter part of his life with honor and decency must, when he is young, consider that one day he shall be old. Samuel Johnson. And so one principle that helps us grow old gracefully is to realize as quickly as possible in our life that we're going to reap what we sow. And secondly, and we've been talking about this, so I won't stay here long, but a second principle is that man shall not live by bread alone. What does it take to have a happy life? And that relates to our current series on how to use our money that we've been looking at on Sunday mornings. In Luke chapter 12, verse 15, and the more that I think about this and the more it's been renewed in my mind, the more I think it's something that we ought to put on our mirror so that we see it every morning when we get up. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions, Jesus said. Sonny and I were talking about this after the lesson today, after church this morning. It's so easy for young people to think, to look at older people who have worked and saved their whole life and say, you know, money has given this person a good life. No, that's not true. Money has not given this person a good life. This person may have lived a life in such a way that he has accumulated some money, but it's very unlikely that money has given anybody a good life. It may make you, it may enable you to live in a fine house or drive a nice car or look successful, but that's not going to bring you happiness. And that's not real success in life. And if we don't learn these things when we're young, then we're going to waste much of our life pursuing wrong things. And then one day we're going to look back and we're going to dislike our lives. I can't tell you how many people I have come to know who have expressed serious regret over the way that they have spent their life, particularly earlier in their life. And they had consequences that came into their life and to their family because of decisions that they made, foolish decisions that they made early in their lives. And now they can't go back and undo it. They made those decisions. The consequences are there now. And they've had to live with those consequences. And some of them are extremely, extremely sad. Some have expressed the serious pain of having lost their children to the Lord. They don't care about spiritual things because of decisions that they made when they were young parents. Because there was so much pressing in their life that they just kind of didn't make the Lord. And going to church and teaching their children the Bible and sitting down and spending not just quality time, but spending time, spiritual time with their children when they were earlier. And I don't know anybody that regrets having spent such time with their family and their children. Because it can only pay rich dividends. French philosopher Rousseau said, "Old men grasp more at life than babies and leave it with a much worse grace than young people. And it is because all their labors having been for this life, they perceive at last their trouble lost. It sounds a lot like Solomon in Ecclesiastes, doesn't it? When he talked about, and we used the verse this morning, about, I hate all the labor that I've taken under the sun, because now I'm facing my death and I realize that all of my labor, everything that I put all my energy and labor into is going to go to someone, and I don't know if he's going to be a fool, if he's going to use it wisely, or if he's going to squander it. And he said, I hate all the labor that I've taken in my life. Boy, I don't want to come to the end of my life and feel that way. And Solomon did use his life that way, didn't he? I mean, he pursued pleasure, he pursued riches, he pursued everything that his eyes desired. There is more to life than material things. In fact, material things are a very small part of what it takes to have a successful, happy life. And what a shame it is to go through life only to find out at the end that our labors are of no lasting value. What good is it, Jesus said, if a man gains the whole world and he loses his own soul? What good is it? Well, you won't know it until you get there, but it's no good. It's no good. And for you to come to the end of your life and have millions of dollars is of no real satisfaction to you when you get to that point. We studied Jesus' parables about the rich fool, the rich young man, the rich man and Lazarus. And so, it is true, a principle that we need to start early in our life practicing and living and understanding is to realize that man shall not live by bread alone. And the accumulation of wealth and things is not going to make you happy. And if you can learn that early, you're going to be much more likely to have a successful life. And then thirdly, is blessed. Third principle, growing old gracefully, is blessed is a man who finds wisdom. That means to be happy. To be blessed means to be happy. Wisdom is insight and understanding that enables you to make the best choices and to use your talents and to handle circumstances properly and avoid the mistakes and the pitfalls that others make. And I think that I know that this is true, I just don't know if I'm saying it the right way. There are two ways you can gain wisdom. I'm not saying that the two ways are equally valuable, but there are two ways you can gain wisdom. One of them is the hard way, by personal experience. Often repeating the same mistakes that others have made over and over and over again. And while you may finally gain some amount of wisdom, you've wasted much of your life in that pursuit. And you have to bear the consequences of the errors that you make along the way. You do, after all, reap what you sow. And then there's an easier way, and that is by listening to God. Proverbs 2:6, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. James says, if any of you lacks wisdom, how do you get it? Ask God. And he gives liberally to all men, and he does not upbraid for your asking. And so this wisdom that comes from God, especially at an early age, it is a rare, beautiful thing to find a young person who's wise, who makes good, wise decisions. Then our journey through life will be much, much more pleasant and much more secure. This is where you can be if you choose to be. Proverbs 3:21, beginning, my son, do not let them, wisdom and knowledge, depart from your sight. Keep sound wisdom and discretion so they will be life to your soul, an adornment to your neck. Then you will walk in your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden fear, nor the onslaught of the wicked when it comes. That sound like something we'd like to be, all of us? Don't be afraid of the onslaught of the wicked when it comes, for the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. You won't be caught in the snare, in the trap. Paul, writing to the young man Timothy, gave him some practical steps that fall in line with the things that we've been talking about. He says in 1 Timothy chapter 4, be an example to others. Be an example to the believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and in purity. 1 Timothy 4:12. And then he says, commit yourself to the word of God. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Chapter 4, verse 13. And then he tells him, cultivate your talents. Do not neglect the gift that is in you. 1 Timothy 4:14. And then he tells him to diligently apply all of his energy to his efforts. In other words, whatever you do, do it with all of your heart as working for the Lord and not for men. He says, meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them that your progress may be evident to all. Take heed to yourself and to your doctrine. Continue in them. And in so doing, you will save both yourself and those who hear you. Someone has said, to keep the heart unwrinkled, to be hopeful, to be kindly, to be cheerful, to be reverent. That is the triumph of old age. And the psalmist will write, the righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He'll grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. I have to tell you, young people, I like growing old. I like being old. I don't mind saying that I'm old. It doesn't bother me. I think the reason it bothers my wife is not necessarily because it reflects on me. I don't know for sure about that. But if we're blessed, we're going to grow old if we're blessed. And if we follow the Lord, then we're going to grow old gracefully. And we're still going to be of great benefit, very possibly more beneficial in our old age for the kingdom than we are when we're young. As difficult as that might be for someone who's young to believe, the sooner you begin applying these principles, living the life that God has designed you to live, the less baggage you're going to have when you grow older to have to contend with, and the more you're going to be able to accomplish for the Lord. Growing old gracefully, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's not something to be dreaded. It is a privilege. It is a blessing. And when we quit viewing and saying things like someone says, and I know I've said this before, but just to remind us, someone says, well, how are you doing? Well, I'm doing better than the alternative. No, you're not. Not if you're a Christian. Not if you're a Christian. Not if what we say and what the Bible teaches is true. There is nothing better than the alternative. And if you live right, grow gracefully, then you can experience that incredible alternative that God has in store for us when we leave this life. And so my encouragement to you as young people and to those of us who are not young anymore is start applying these principles to our life. And let's change our lives with God's help so that we can be beneficial to God's kingdom until the very day that he calls us home, while we stand and sing.
Have thine own.